You like to watch new stuff, right? Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time. Like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. A new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's all new, and it's streaming now on Hulu.
Welcome back to Keep It. Merry Christmas, you filthy animals.
That should be said sensually and not in the traditional. That's from Home Alone, right? My brain tripped. It's from Home Alone.
Yes, it's from Home Alone.
I don't think I've watched a single Christmas movie this year. You know what's weird about regurgitating the discussion about what the best Christmas movie is? We've all seen them a million times now. I have nothing left to mine from them.
Fair. Yeah, we need new ones.
Yeah.
And not the Hallmark kind.
Yeah, right. Well, we rehashed that this week. No offense to our girl Danica McKellar, but it's a pass for now.
I will say Vanessa Hudgens's The Night Before Christmas is very schlocky in the Princess Switch vein.
Oh, okay.
Yes. It's a knight is transported to present day, and then he falls for her, who's a high school science teacher.
I feel like I'm constantly being forced to fall in love with Vanessa Hudgens. Remember when we put her on the panel of So You Think You Can Dance? Is she still on that show? I don't know. And her comments ranged from great job to wow to I really loved that.
Remember when she was on the panel for Drag Race?
Oh, yes.
I'm really into voguing right now.
Which means you've heard of it.
I've
heard of voguing right now.
I used to stan Vanessa Hudgens. And then you remember she was like, I would love to work with Woody Allen.
Right. How did she not pick up on that cultural discussion?
Well, she's busy.
Like, you're telling me she's like locked in a room with bullets over Broadway still? Like, here it is. I love it.
Netflix has her on a soundstage, and they are filming a different movie every week.
Okay. You know, it is one of the definitive Christmas movies, though. A Diva's Christmas Carol with
Vanessa
Williams.
I feel like we talked about that last year.
Okay. Well, I mean, there are certain classics that reward you again and again.
Bear repeating.
Yes. The acting career of Kathy Griffin, always on my mind.
Yeah, she does what she has to do.
What is she, the Ghost of Christmas Present? Anyway, she's loudmouthed and teaching a diva not to be so much of a diva.
As much as I enjoy her acting, and I use that term very loosely, is the worst part of the worst episode of X-Files. Well, until the reboot happened.
Kathy Griffin was on the X-Files?
Yes.
Wow.
In an episode called Fight Club, and she plays a twin.
Oh, good.
It's utterly insane, and she's so awful in it.
Well, you know, one of the great reality TV show moments of all time is when she was rehearsing for a guest stint on Law & Order SVU. And they're rehearsing it, and she can't get it right, and the entire cast is frustrated. It's one of those things where the whole episode is set up to be like schlocky. Oh, but, you know, we'll mingle with the stars. It'll be great. And actually devolves into a real and uncomfortable moment. Tough to rewatch in a way. But also, Kathy Griffin, weirdly good at being vulnerable on her reality show. So
of course.
Always miss that show.
Yes. I mean, I loved her on the reality show. She's a perfect comedian.
A perfect comedian. Your Trump-like compliments.
She's a perfect comedian. Acting, great gowns.
Yeah. Beautiful gowns.
Beautiful gowns.
Beautiful ghosts.
This episode is not a mailbag, so don't turn off your dial.
Do you think podcast listeners don't like a mailbag episode?
I don't know. Some people do, but sometimes we have to trick them. And it's not a clip show either. Remember when we tricked them into listening to a clip show last year?
Yeah. Guys, I'm sorry. You were dumb.
Well.
Don't fall for it again.
We grew up in the 90s. We know how to dupe people into listening to a clip show.
Yeah. No. In a way, I feel like it makes us seem legitimate that we would do that. You know, like a bottle episode of One Day at a Time where they're trapped in an elevator and we're recounting all their adventures and divorce.
We've got a extra special holiday episode for you all. Lewis and I are going to be getting into our favorite films of the decade. And then Aida will join us for a conversation on our favorite music, TV, and books of the decade.
Which is super daunting. I thought I was going to have a crystal clear memory of the decade, but turns out it's not solidified yet. Like, I thought of the movie 12 Years a Slave the other day. I'm like, Jesus, what year is that? And I was like, nah. And then it took me like a minute to realize 2013, of course.
Yeah. And then we'll be joined by Shani Nicholas to talk about astrology and why you are seeing it constantly talked about on Twitter and Instagram. And we're going to get into my chart, Aida's chart, and a little bit of Lewis's, and find out what any of that even means.
As you know, I'm a skeptic when it comes to this stuff, and I'm worried she's going to tap into some heretofore unseen part of my psyche and like make me weep on air, so we'll see.
Well, listen, Scully.
Yeah.
We're going to get into it.
All right.
That means I'm older. And John Lovett is the cigarette-smoking man.
Oh, sure.
We'll be right back. Why don't we start out with movies first? Best movies of the decade.
All right.
But I'm going to give a caveat. Everything on this list, of mine at least, I don't know how you structured yours.
Yeah.
My list is my favorites of the decade. I'm not making a best of list because that list would obviously include like 12 Years a Slave.
Yeah.
Or Carol. But I'm talking about movies that were my favorite to enjoy, you know, I'm rewatching. Like, I don't rewatch 12 Years a Slave.
It actually, it bothers me that there has to be a schism like this, but I think it's necessary to point out there's just a difference between movies that you're sort of addicted to and, you know, eat up like a Flintstone vitamin every day, and then ones you definitely will never return to again, you know. Mine, I think, are, I did my best to make a combination of both. But, like, you're not going to see, for instance, The Tree of Life on my list.
You will not see it on mine either.
Remember that year when just the world decided on Jessica Chastain and they threw her at us 7 or 8 times?
Yes.
Yeah. We didn't vote on her. She just appeared like a comet.
And you know what? She's caught in Molly's game.
Still.
How many do you have?
I just picked 5.
Oh, you just picked 5?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, why don't we go with your first?
Okay. Well, I'm going to cluster 3 of mine together because they sort of encapsulate what I will remember about the decade most, and they are Carol, which, again, I'm sorry we've maybe discussed that movie to death on this podcast, but at the same time, there's no other movie like that where it's, one, so beautiful. It looks like a gay man's coloring book or something. Just down to the costumes, down to the look on Cate Blanchett's face constantly.
Is,
like, everything is a moving painting, and the drama of it is, to invoke an Ira term, Cirque level, you know? Mm. And it's probably worth noting that Todd Haynes is fucking obsessed with Douglas Cirque. So,
of course.
Yeah, that influence is there. Also, Call Me By Your Name, which, talk about moving painting. And then also Moonlight, and the 3 of those together to me signified that I will remember about this decade exquisite queer stories.
Yes.
It's not just that they're interesting or truthful or, you know, in some cases just recognizably, you know, human. There's something about the level of grandiosity in them that is beyond any heterosexual story I've seen. These movies get at the sort of intense and singular joy of queer romance. And I feel like that is a specific find of this decade in movies.
Okay.
Yeah.
I love that.
How about that essay I wrote for you?
You sure did.
Salon.com, I am right here. Find me.
I will say that the end of the decade really gave us a lot of beautiful queer films that weren't like the ones we grew up with.
You know?
They weren't message films. They felt human. They felt important. They felt beautiful. Even a message film that I really liked, 100 Beats Per Minute, I thought was gorgeous.
Oh, that movie's great.
Film. Yeah. Call Me By Your Name and Moonlight are both on my list.
Oh, yeah. I do, of course, wish these movies had more actual queer people in them. And again, I posed this question before, and I'm wondering if people can answer it for me. In Carol, Sarah Paulson, who is, of course, a lesbian, plays a lesbian in the movie. I want to know if there are any other lesbian roles this decade in popular films, but in any film, really, where a lesbian played the role, specifically in a drama, I'd like to know. That's just incredibly rare.
Yeah, it would be nice to see more American films about lesbians having those actual lesbian actresses in them, too.
Right.
You know, having actual gay actors in films, too. I feel like it's why I respect Pose so much. It's not my favorite, and it's not going to be on my list. of the best of the decade, but I enjoy that show so much. And I really just enjoy the fact that these trans characters are played by trans people.
Mm-hmm. Right. Do you know what I think is the straightest movie on my list that I still want to mention, because I want to prove to people that there is a realm of heterosexuality that I approve of and will watch?
Okay.
My answer is Whiplash.
Mm.
First of all, it's a very... I like movies where not a word is wasted. There's not an extra scene, not an extra line of dialogue that feels out of place. Every part of it adds up to the whole. And also, you can't tear your eyes away. And just the intensity of both J.K. Simmons and Miles Teller, who, by the way, may be a definitive actor of the decade for me, starting with Rabbit Hole, of course.
You know I fucking love Miles Teller.
Yeah.
He's the reason my guns are topped.
I'm there. Oh, right. He's in that movie.
Top Gun Maverick.
I'm not over the fact that the woman in that movie is Jennifer Connelly.
Yes.
She just reappears like a cicada every 17 years. Last time I saw you was what? House of Sand and Fog or some shit? All right.
But yeah, he's in that, and the trailer showed him on the beach. He looks great.
Yeah, he does look great. No. Also, personal story, and it revolves around the holidays. You'll all like this or at least tolerate it. Every year at home, when I'm around, I have three brothers and my mom and my dad, we'd like try to watch a movie together, sometimes at a theater, sometimes at home. My mom, who is deeply disinterested in pop culture, and it is a wonder she can sit through this podcast, and she does it every week, always falls asleep. She has, if not narcolepsy, some other disorder. Like, I can't, I don't know what's happening. And like, she'll fall asleep during movies she picks. So this year, I was like, we're going to go in another direction, and you will be shocked awake the entire time. And to this day, Whiplash is the only movie she has ever sat through and stayed awake for. And at the end of it, she goes, well, I don't know if I liked anybody in that movie. I'm like, good. And you're awake.
I think I love your mother.
Yeah. The cautious, optimistic skepticism is correct.
Yeah. And then what's your last film?
Oh, and then also 2 Days, One Night, which is a movie I've brought up on here. Mm-hmm. It's a Marion Cotillard movie in French, directed by the Dardenne brothers. It's about a woman who learns in order to keep her job, she has to convince everybody she works with at this factory to give up their huge or relatively huge Christmas bonuses. And it's just this movie about, you know, frustrating, soul-sucking capitalism that's about 90 minutes long. It's really just her having one-on-one interactions with her coworkers. And the ending is, to go back to an earlier word, so exquisite. There should be classes on how to write endings like this that feel so satisfying. It's that combination of the ending feels inevitable and also surprising. And I think that's just what a perfect ending is all about. And God, Marion Cotillard is just... first of all, she's like bewitchingly gorgeous. And then secondly, just every emotion registers on her face. She has like a drug problem in this movie, kind of, that I feel manifests in her body movements in a really awesome way. She's just one of the best actresses ever.
Mm. That's a good list.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, I made 10.
Yeah, I know. Look at you. You did some real homework.
Well, you already talked about Moonlight, and yeah. I think I've already talked about how much that film means to me. I think it's gorgeous. I think Barry Jenkins is one of the best directors that we have right now.
Yeah.
I just love the way that he instills romance into everything that he directs. Like, his camera, just like, I love the way it moves. I love the way it sees black people. I love the way that his films are true collaborations with the composers, with the cinematographer. I love it so much.
There's something about that movie, too, where the final scene where it's just the two guys reuniting in that restaurant and it lingers for a long time, and it in some ways nothing is happening, in some ways like a lot's happening. What it leads up to, you might think like, oh, is that too little for a payoff? But in a way, it's not. Like, it's expressive enough for those two people. It's a very provocative ending that is not in any way salacious.
During its release, I remember there was a lot of talk about, you know, like, why didn't we see them sleep with each other? Why didn't we, et cetera? And I love that movie a lot more now as time goes on. I think it ended the way it should have ended. I know he's influenced a lot by Chinese director Wong Kar-wai.
Yes, In the Mood for Love, et cetera.
Yeah, and the film Happy Together, which is a beautiful romance film about two men, and it ends in sort of an almost melancholy sort of way that it's reflected in Moonlight, and I feel like he gives us the sweeter companion to that movie.
Yeah, there are actually things about that movie that go under-discussed, like how awesome the kid performances are.
Yeah.
Which I continue to think is an incredibly rare situation when I'm looking at a kid and not mad at it.
Yeah. Parasite.
Parasite fucking rules.
Yeah, it's fucking amazing.
You can and there's still a chance you don't know what it's about, and it's, I hate to be a podcaster sitting here talking about a movie being like, don't learn anything about it before you go in, but there's like four movies packed into this movie, and each one of them is thrilling and zany and sometimes provocative. You all leave a little smarter.
Yeah. I will say Young Adult.
Oh, sure. By our good friend Diablo Cody.
I fucking love that movie, and I keep coming back to it every year.
What's your favorite thing about that character? If you guys don't know Young Adult, and I assume you do, Charlize Theron plays a young adult author who goes back to her hometown and sort of fancies herself a celebrity, but is actually a known mess, mm-hmm. who is trying to reel back in her high school boyfriend, played by Patrick Wilson, who is snack.tumblr.com, as you know.
I love a little different moments about it every time. I think what I really love, last time I watched it, which was like 2 weeks ago, she just prints out the birth announcement, and it's just like obsessively staring at it.
Yeah.
And then she gets out of bed with her cup and just packs her suitcase and leaves.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
She's completely just entranced by this situation.
Yeah.
And goes.
I love it. She's so amazing in it.
By the way, have you seen Bombshell yet?
Yes.
Charlize in Bombshell, I don't know that it's an amazing performance. She plays Megyn Kelly, of course, in this movie.
You can take the word shell from the title.
Yeah. Wow, Siskel and Ebert jumped out.
I did not like Bombshell, but also I just think it works over time to paint these women as heroes when I think that anyone who works for Fox News is soulless.
No, I know. It's such a dubious situation, and you feel icky in a way watching this narrative, but obviously you've seen the trailer where Charlize Theron is wearing the prosthetics that make her look like Megyn Kelly. Here's my question. Was that necessary?
No.
I mean, just, I'm not, I kept just like looking at like these small little tectonic plates in her face and wondering if they were going to keep shifting. But she does vocally tap into something about Megyn Kelly, like the way, the business-like way she speaks. But at the same time, it's almost like that impression ends up stifling her and it ends up sounding flat. And when I think of flat dramatic performances, I think of, get ready, Jessica Chastain. And I feel like it's kind of a Jessica Chastain performance.
Yeah. The Almodovar film that is on my list is not Pain and Glory,
oh.
even though I love that film so much, and it's one of his best. I would say it's The Skin I Live In.
People fucking love that movie, and I've never seen it.
It's amazing. You gotta see it. Antonio Banderas is insane in that film.
He is one of those people that contains multitudes, and we don't talk about that. We just think of him as still The Mask of Zorro, which is a 2.5-star movie from 1998.
Yeah, and Elena Anaya is a fantastic in the film, too. It's just, I don't want to ruin that movie either. It's almost like Parasite, and that, like, what you think it about isn't what it's about, and then it truly just becomes bonkers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ghost Protocol. Mission Impossible.
You do enjoy a Tom situation.
I do. And I think it's my favorite of the franchise.
I'm thinking about that. It is so crazy how good the movies are now as opposed to then. Because I think the first and second one are not good.
Mm. I like the first one.
Yeah.
But the second one is very eh.
The second one is definitely the worst.
Yeah. I just think it's really good. I don't know.
We did not pick much in the way of comedies.
Yeah.
It's not that comedic a decade.
Yeah. I mean, I was close to putting Spy or 21 Jump Street onto my list.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Spy would definitely be in my top five funny movies. Though, let me tell you something. There's now that I saw previews for the new Rose Byrne movie in which she's doing something kind of similar. What's that movie called? Like a Boss?
Mm-hmm.
Woof. It's weird to see
her and Tiffany Haddish.
Yeah. Tiffany Haddish, who is slyly becoming the queen of January releases. God love the woman.
Oops. A romance film that is on my list is by Gina Prince Bythewood, Beyond the Lights.
Oh, sure.
I love that film.
Tell me about that movie.
I love that movie. It is Gugu Mbatha-Raw plays a pop star, basically, and Minnie Driver's her mom.
Wow, I'm there.
Yeah, and she sort of like hates her life.
I'm speechless, if you will.
Unfortunately, Nate Parker's in the film, but he's great in it. And it's before we all knew that he was raping people. She hates her life and tries to jump off a balcony and kill herself in the beginning of the film, and he saves her. And then it becomes sort of almost like a bodyguard-ish film where he becomes intertwined in her life and she has to fix what's wrong with her life. And it's just, it's a beautiful romantic film that I love.
Gugu Mbatha-Raw, remember when we stuck her in Miss Sloan and she had to like hold a clipboard for Miss Sloan?
Yeah.
Guys, if you haven't seen Miss Sloan, I'm sorry to dog Jessica Chastain so much this podcast, what was happening in that movie? Somebody needs to apologize. I don't know who it is.
Or The Morning Show.
Right.
Gugu Mbatha-Raw just walking around.
I still think of her as being on that show Undercovers, which deserved better.
Yeah.
With Boris Kodjoe.
I love Undercovers. I was tweeting about that recently.
Boris Kodjoe is one of the painfully hot people.
Do you remember the commercials that where they kept using the word sexpionage?
I totally forgot that. You just unscrewed a 2010 part of my brain.
Nightcrawler.
I love Nightcrawler, and I totally forgot to think about it.
Yeah, Jake Gyllenhaal did what he had to do.
There's a lot of Rene Russo pointing at monitors as a hard-bitten news producer, saying things like, camera 2, monitor 3, which is my favorite type of character.
And unfortunately, it feels like that movie is a fluke because Dan Gilroy has yet to make another movie that I like as much as this movie.
Velvet Buzzsaw? Velvet fuck no. Also, another movie where we're just like, Toni Collette, you're so crazy. Do a crazy character. Guys, she's not that crazy. Like, I didn't like her in that, and I still don't like her in Knives Out.
Mm-mm. Wow.
What a fruitful conversation about movies we had. Shit.
Knives Hive. There's still two more.
Oh.
Edge of Tomorrow.
Totally forgot about that movie. It is really good. Not my brand.
Me and Tommy again.
Yeah.
Tom Cruise.
Emily Blunt, we need you to focus on the acidic comedy that you were born to do and stop doing these weird action franchise things. It could have been anybody in Looper, and you spent time on that. I need you to be a funny asshole again.
Yeah. I do love my Tom Cruise movies. And lastly, Crimson Peak. Guillermo del Toro.
Right. Wait, no, who's the woman in that?
Jessica Chastain.
I know, yeah. Oh, yeah. I was going to say, Jessica Chastain redeemed.
It is. It's her best work of the decade.
Actually, I would agree with that. Remember Zero Dark Thirty? I wonder if that holds up.
It doesn't.
Have you seen it recently?
Yeah, it's just on a plane.
Oh, yeah.
Just her walking around in a blazer.
She really is a lot of walking around in that movie. And then a one moment of crying, which is my least favorite type of Oscar nomination.
Yeah.
Wait, is she a tough woman who then cries? I mean, that's such a familiar Oscar arc. And Margot Robbie in Bombshell is looking ahead that way this season, so.
Yeah.
I'm on to her.
Yeah. We'll be back shortly, and I'll get into it with Lewis and Aida about our favorite music, TV, and books of the decade. And I'm back with Lewis and Aida.
Hello, hello.
We are...
Did you live through this decade, too?
Of course. I wasn't cognizant for most of it.
Okay.
But like,
okay.
I'm here.
Well, I hope that you are ready to dive into our favorite music of the decade.
100%.
Yeah. Okay. Aida, why don't you share me some of yours first?
Favorite album of literally all time is Overexposed, Maroon 5.
Oh, wow.
Right?
Hold on, which hits are on that?
It's one of those albums where I know every track, but you let it run through beginning to end, so you don't know the name of any single.
You know I came out as a Maroon 5 stan.
Right, yeah. A Maroonist.
Last year on the show, during the Super Bowl. That one has One More Night.
Okay, yep. Mm-hmm.
Payphone.
Payphone.
Yep. Daylight. Lucky Strike.
Oh, my God.
You know
Unkiss
what?
Unkiss Me?
Yeah.
Such a good album.
They have certain songs there that I think rank among the biggest YouTube videos of all time, which is always so shocking. Because I associate that with, you know, Despacito and Gangnam Style, whatever. But Maroon 5, right up there.
Maroon 5, you know, they actually kind of did what they had to do on this
album.
Truly.
Well, I mean, there must be a committee of hundreds who write each of those songs. Like, they're so set up to... unfail. They always kill it. You know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you know they probably go through like 50 demos before they dwindle it down to like the good 12 tracks. But that's my weird pop choice. But I think my mainstays are Solange, Seat at the Table,
Control, definitely on my list.
SZA.
That's definitely on my list
of
as well.
To Pimp a Butterfly, Kendrick Lamar.
I'm not that big a Kendrick fan.
No, you're not?
No.
Is that so?
Yeah. We talked about this before. I appreciate the work and I know that it's good. But it's just personally not for me.
I will say that I, and apologies if I've reiterated this before, his performance of All Right at the BET Awards is my favorite award show performance of the decade. Truly something you watched and you were like, why is this the loudest thing I've ever heard?
Terrified my mother.
Yeah, right. It was really bracing.
I will say that my list includes those. It also has, my favorite of the decade is still Maga Kanye, My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy.
Okay, well, fuck it up. That's still a good album.
You know that album is still flawless to me. Yeah. Like Devil in a New Dress, maybe my favorite song of the decade.
Yeah.
Yeah, him and Rick Ross.
I am disappointed with myself because at one point in my life, I was so album-oriented. And in a way, I still am because I listen to those old albums a lot. But in the 2010s,
just
you know, this thing
cracking up in the vinyls.
Please.
Blowing the dust off it.
Going through my catalog, yes. And just, I lost the fervor for collecting music that way, or I just got swept up in the Apple Music Spotify occasion of everything.
Yeah.
And so now, the only album that really joins me with the Pitchfork community in terms of album celebration is Carly Rae Jepsen, Emotion. I still listen to that 100,000 times.
No, that's a good choice.
Great
though.
Fucking
and
album.
And I love the album before that, too, as I've always said. Mm-hmm. I love Curiosity, amazing.
Yeah, on my list.
Yeah, and I would say that album, My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy, gave us Nicki. With Monster.
That's my favorite of her features ever.
Yeah, and it's probably one of the... She killed every other person on that track.
It's sad that Nicki is such a big part of the decade for me, but unfortunately, there's not really a singular album.
Yeah. I know.
Yeah. You know, I mean...
She's a single queen.
Yeah. Taylor Swift was echoing Beyonce recently when she was talking about, you know, the mass-producing singles and getting back to albums. And, you know, if we went back to Beyonce's Life is Beautiful documentary, she was mentioning that she was like, you know, no one's in the singles anymore, no one's in the albums anymore, you know, they want singles. And you know, I think that's what gave us Beyonce and Lemonade, which are
is
both
on your list,
which are both on my list.
Yeah.
I think the definitive musical moment of the decade is the surprise drop of Beyonce's self-titled album.
Yeah.
Oh,
because
yeah.
It just changed the way in which people were excited about music. You didn't know it was coming.
Was
you had to drop
at home
everything
watching Scandal.
No promo.
Yes.
Our whole world shook.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that
interrupted
course,
my live tweeting of the Scandal finale with the digital drop.
I love that. That's a lyric, isn't it? What's the lyric?
Changed the game with that digital drop.
You know where you were
with
that
digital drop.
Yes. I don't know where I was at. yes, I do. I was with my high school boyfriend, and we stopped everything to go listen to it. Mm.
And then, of course, there was the visual album you were overwhelmed with, too. It was truly a new way to be overwhelmed by music.
Truly.
And then it was so much to grasp immediately. I had to pick hot takes out of thin air, and I was, you know, Haunted is underrated. You know, like, I'm still clinging to it.
Haunted is a beautiful tree.
That video. My album, in that sphere, Channel Orange is on my list, as well as Anti.
Okay, Anti's
a really
good choice.
Really just, like, cemented Rihanna as an icon,
Joint, that track, James Joint, is one of the best songs I've ever heard. Like, she's singing to... I think she made that album deliberately, like, I'm not making the stuff that you guys want me to make. I'm going to make whatever feels good for me.
It's crazy how much she's progressed in a decade. I mean, in 2010, she would have had Only Girl in the World out. Mm-hmm. And think about how her music has changed since then, you know?
Well, it doesn't exist anymore.
Oh, yeah, that's right. She's vapors.
I know by the time this episode comes out, that bitch ain't released shit.
No. Nothing will change.
Lies. Lies. My list also has Lana Del Rey, Born to Die.
Talk about a definitive 2010s personality, because she, to me, was the first domino dropping from music sounding like TikTok by Kesha to it sounding like Billie Eilish.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, getting into that real murmury, ambient, but also dreamlike and kind of intellectual place.
And she just really just sort of started the decade as a joke.
Yes, right.
And really
unforgettable
just sort of
SNL performance
came from that.
Yeah, right.
And you have to respect it. Other pop is Body Talk by Robin, 1989 Taylor.
It's so crazy that Body Talk is this decade.
Call Your Girlfriend on that one?
Yeah, yeah.
That's one of the best songs ever.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah. 1989, I am one of the people who still thinks that 1989 is better than Red.
I know, I feel the same way.
Yeah.
And talk about another, again, that was one of the few albums where it seemed like you had no choice but to pay attention, because it was both a definitive and really snatched collection of songs for her, and also just the perfect state-of-the-art that year, that month, that day production.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just it was exactly of that moment.
Yeah. Definitely Vampire Weekend's Modern Vampires of the City.
Okay.
And lastly, I mean, Drake dominated this decade, right?
Yeah, we
Take
can't
Care
ignore
was
that.
Take Care was perfect.
Take Care
it did what
practice?
It had to do.
Do you know the song Practice?
Yes, of course.
I love that song.
Practice. He did that when the kids booed him. and
that was the song he was doing when they booed him?
I mean, he did one of them.
Oh,
yeah.
I see. Yeah.
Yeah, they didn't know those
the
songs.
The deep cuts that Tyler likes.
Yeah.
Is what he did.
And, I mean, Hamilton cast recording.
Oh my okay. God.
I mean,
what are your Hamilton
sheer
feelings?
Talent?
Yeah.
Well, first of all, I've only heard the music. I've never seen the musical, mm-hmm. and I love the music. So I'm really worried to watch the musical and be like, "How does it all string together?" Yeah. I feel like I'm not gonna like it. But I love the. I'm just. Scared.
I saw it at the Public.
How was that?
Just did a hair flip of my non-existent hair.
The world felt it, Ira.
Through happenstance, I ended up seeing it like in the fourth row, and. I will never forget looking at Renee Elise Goldsberry doing Satisfied, which is my favorite song from the soundtrack.
Satisfied
please,
is
please, complaining
perfect.
That you're the oldest yeah. and the wittiest in a family, please. Join me on my level, Renee Elise. but just the, you know, if you know that song, it's a lot of lyrics.
And the she's gossip like, in New York is insidious.
Yes. And she's like flipping through it at auctioneer speed. Yeah. To watch her like heaving through those lyrics and sort of delirious with
when the stage
rage.
Spins
yes
back oh. yes the rewind part.
Yeah amazing
yeah
I also fucking I'm not a crier excuse me when she was done it was like she pulled a string in me and I fell forward and cried I will never experience anything like that again.
I think that throughout the decade Hamilton obviously has become just sort of ubiquitous, and you know, Lin-Manuel Miranda, you know, whether you love him or not, like he's really become sort of a personality now. Mm-hmm. He's just sort of everywhere, and I think you have to respect him, I think. Yeah, I do respect him, and I think that we've gotten away from just how powerful that initial gut punch of Hamilton was, right?
You
know, it's become so seeped in the culture and expensive tickets and everyone mm-hmm. sort of memeing it online and Lin-Manuel tweeting you to have a beautiful day that like you've forgotten how powerful it was and how good he is at what he does. And I was reminded of it when I saw the In the Heights trailer and I was
which
like,
looks so fantastic.
And I was like, that mm-hmm. is an artist who creates.
No, I know. I mean, he seems like a wonderful person, but you also think of him as like the Walmart smiley face, like
yes.
coming through, like store and knocking down all the prices.
There's a blue light special. Yeah. wow.
I think also the second most definitive song for me in terms of Broadway this decade has got to be Waving Through a Window by
Yes.
That song, I mean, it's just, you hear it the first time, I feel like you have to play it seven more times.
That's exactly the
There's such a
the
throb
feeling.
And pop to that song, and such a brilliant vocal performance.
I wish it had been a bigger sort of pop hit, because it mm-hmm. reminded me of when Broadway and pop used to inform each other much more.
That's right, true. Yeah. Lucas Hedges, get in that movie.
Yes. Let's swing things back around to television and what we were really enjoying this year. I'm going to go ahead and say, Watchmen is not on my list. Yeah, it's had one season.
Right.
And it may not even have a second season, and I'm not counting that as television. It was a fantastic journey. It was amazing. But, it feels like a limited series to me.
Yeah, mm-hmm. sure. Also, I mean, just the very presence of Jean Smart is just, I mean, if there was ever Lewis Catnip, it would be Jean Smart.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm behind. I haven't seen it yet, so.
You haven't seen anything, Lewis.
I have to tell you, TV, as more people accelerated into watching every single show, I really shied away and stuck to my guns with movies. I don't know. I like that things are finite. I like that you can't really be behind on a movie, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I have a list of my faves, but I want to know what you enjoyed this year, Lewis, that you would put on yours then.
In this end of decade? Yes. Yeah. I think still my favorite show of the decade, and obviously didn't start this decade, is 30 Rock.
Yeah.
Just again.
I was wavering whether or not it's on my list. And you know what? The latter half of the series is fucking hilarious.
And talk about, I mean, every season it seemed like they were just, to use that word again, accelerating. Like the jokes got faster. Jenna became crazier. Tracy became crazier. Liz became somehow more relatable and more wild, and she was having more sex. But as my friend Elise at home always says, she goes, I don't know if that's the best show of all time, but it is the best jokes of all time.
Yes.
You know, and
absolutely.
And I love shows that are delivery systems for jokes. We have Happy Endings, which is another one. I love Difficult People this decade. Mm-hmm.
Happy Endings is on my list. It is maybe one of my favorite sitcoms ever.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I miss it.
Yeah. I love a show where at the end of every episode, I feel compelled to rank the whole cast.
Yes.
I mean, like, well, you were in fifth today, Damon Wayans.
Yes. Power rankings. I feel that it was missing from a lot of people's best of decades lists.
Yeah, right. That's a while ago now.
Yeah.
And I will throw in, of course, Mad Men. I mean, just...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Everyone will tell you it's a moving painting of a TV show, but just... I love how characters you didn't think about at all would suddenly move into frame and be just coruscating with humanity.
And devastated. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It started last decade, but season 4 began this decade, and The Suitcase, one of the best episodes of television ever aired this decade.
Mm-hmm. Elizabeth Moss, one of the craveably dependable dramatic actresses. Definitive 2010-er.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Aida?
I feel like maybe this isn't fair because this is the latter. You know what? I don't care. This goes to Phoebe Waller-Bridge for two shows that I think were the best shows I've ever seen.
Fleabag
and Killing Eve, yes.
Yes, yes. 100%. Well, she did only do season one.
She did only season one?
Yes.
Well, I was going to say I liked season one better than season two. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to lie. I really did. I think the storyline between Villanelle and Sandra Oh's character gets a little drug out, but her Eve, of course. But yeah, love Fleabag. Love that someone was willing to take on grief and trauma in such a cynical way. I don't think I'd ever seen that in a TV show with a woman portrayed as the first character. Mm-hmm.
That Loved TV it. Show, to me, is my favorite album of all time, is Exile in Gaiva by Liz Phair. And Phoebe Waller-Bridge reminds me of Liz Phair in that the lines are simultaneously cynical, super funny, dark, telling about her at once. Just like every single line, you learn something real about her. I just love people who almost seemingly without trying, obviously there's a lot of effort, you are constantly being united with a believable full adult.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, and also, for animation, I'm a big animation freak, I would say BoJack Horseman. Mm-hmm. Love BoJack Horseman, Rick and Morty.
Yeah, BoJack, a cute little show that's, now it's devastating.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I cried. I cried multiple times watching BoJack Horseman.
I've been watching BoJack now, obviously, because I'm writing on an animated show, and I'm loving it. But I've never always loved those comedies that then veer into wanting to depress you. It's why I had to bail on You're the Worst this decade.
Uh-huh.
It was just like, oh, this was a fun show about people in LA, and now it's about battling mental health. And I already have enough of that.
I do that in real life.
Yes.
So.
Yes. I will say that one of my favorite shows of ever is Halt and Catch Fire.
That's coming up on a lot of critics' lists, and I regret not seeing it. My good friend Karen Tongson from the Pop Rocket podcast, RIP, is very obsessed with that.
Yes, it was initially sort of a Mad Men knockoff. It was starring Lee Pace, my favorite B-list actor, as sort of like this Steve Jobs-ish guy and the people around him. And then it morphed into being a series about the women surrounding him. And it is a beautiful show.
Yeah, what a beautiful maneuver. You think they planned that ahead of time?
They've talked about how they found the show.
Okay.
Yeah, and it really sort of...
Trivia about Lee Pace, by the way. He is hot.
Yes, and gay.
Yeah, right. Yeah. That's my Snapple cap for you.
But no, once the show started focusing on Cameron and Donna, it was really just another show altogether, and it's beautiful television, and it's only four seasons.
Oh, by the way, my favorite show that grapples with mental health of the decade, Lady Dynamite, anybody?
Lady Dynamite was great.
With Maria Bamford. Again, talk about a couldn't-make-her-up personality.
Gone too soon.
Yes, with, I love her parents in the show, Mary Kay Place and Ed Begley Jr. Go and rewatch that. It's still enough.
All of the Supermen that appeared in it, the actors who played Superman, it was a beautiful joke.
There's an episode with a raccoon, and it's my friend's raccoon.
Mm. Really?
Yes.
Your friend has a raccoon?
A raccoon farm.
That was the first episode of the second season, I believe.
There you go.
Yeah.
Okay.
I know.
Yeah. All right. You know, I would say Enlightened.
Oh, duh.
Enlightened.
It's really like you say a show like that, I'm like, I must be forgetting 50 shows.
I know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Laura Dern is so fucking visceral in that show.
Yeah, she's
such
a pointed actress. Yes.
Yeah. When you talk about how, she's caricature and, like, plays, like, whatever and broadly. I just, like, you haven't seen it. Like the broad works because it's human.
Yeah.
Also, humans can be broad.
I mean, like, we've seen Laura Dern work for now 3.5 decades or something. Mm-hmm. And just, she has such range. You're right. She's getting sort of, we remember her now thanks to Big Little Lies and now Marriage Story. And a little bit Enlightened. The gifts from Enlightened, we think of her as, you know, a cartoonishly angry and demanding, let me speak to the manager type person.
But there's a show about mental health. You know, the very real scenes where she's exploring her psyche and Enlightened are some of the most revealing TV I've seen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Toni Collette, United States of Tara.
United
another strange
States of
one.
Tara.
Yeah.
That's a beautiful show. Definitely a good mention.
Hannibal. Absolutely.
Yeah. Haven't seen.
Hannibal.
The loudest stands who have ever existed.
I mean,
I want to rank the loudest stands.
I think
Lucifer,
above them.
I hear you.
Above them are the OA.
Yeah. The OA.
Don't work on any show on Netflix without an OA stand going in your mentions. I will also say Scandal. We talked about it earlier. It's the show I feel like that invented live tweeting.
Yeah. Oh, totally. Yeah.
And when it was hot, that ride was like unlike anything else that we watched on TV.
Mm-hmm. Love this. I didn't watch it comprehensively, but I love in the latter seasons, scenes between Kerry Washington and Bellamy Young. So much fun.
Yeah. Schitt's Creek. Very funny.
Yes.
I love that it's ending the decade with a comedy that's about jokes.
Yes, right.
And jokes also and just fun characters.
And like, it's nice to have a comedy every once in a while that like your whole family can just fall into like a hammock. You know what I mean? Yeah. Also, something about Dan Levy, who has been on the show and is nice and normal and probably like a wonderful person who doesn't need to hear this. Mm-hmm. I just look at him and think, but we're not dating. That's weird. What's happening? What happened?
Well, he met you.
That's okay.
Yeah, that's what happened.
Shattered.
The Good Wife.
Oh, right.
And in turn, The Good Fight.
Without that season four, without the Kalinda and that crazy guy she was dating.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. Truly a mess. But, I mean, season five of The Good Wife is one of the best things I've ever seen. And Hitting the Fan is my favorite episode of the decade with the suitcase from Mad Men falling right after it.
That is just a show that utilized actors that you miss mm-hmm. really well. Mm-hmm. You're just like, God, I haven't seen Martha Plimpton in 10 minutes. Where? Mm-hmm. Oh, she's here.
Yes. Yeah.
Jane Curtin's a judge. Yeah.
This is Camila Cabello's best friend, Gina Rodriguez.
Oh my
before
God.
We realized her true colors.
Virgins.
Jane the Virgin was such a good show, though.
It was.
It's
it was
such
so
a good show. It's emotional. It's heartfelt, and it does like twist the soap opera genre into like something that's human and real. And I mean, it was a perfect TV show.
Yeah, it's done in a way where it's live action, but it feels animated to me. Mm-hmm. You know, it has the speed of an animated show.
I would say with Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, which is on my list too, which was phenomenal and deserved more recognition from the just like awards community for what it did.
Jane the Virgin really should be your mission statement because you like bridging soap to reality. Yeah, mm-hmm.
Yes.
And all the insanity between the two of them.
Yes, you know, and also niggas do give me heebie-jeebies.
The facts are facts.
I guess that's everything except for, obviously, Succession.
Okay, yeah, I was waiting. I was really waiting.
Y'all thought I wasn't going to bring up Succession. No. Y'all know I'm Succession Hive.
Also, a best of decade movie performance that I forgot to bring up earlier. Vanessa Redgrave and Coriolanus, which stars Ralph Fiennes, directed by him too, I believe. Gerard Butler's in it. Vanessa Redgrave, one of the great actors of all time. We can get into her Israel stance some other time. Just watch that performance and tweet me about it. I just want to talk about that performance again. It was so wonderful.
Yeah, well, and us talking about 30 Rock too reminded me that the decade started with Tina Fey releasing Bossy Pants, which was one of my favorite books of the decade. And I think sort of a blueprint for how you do celebrity books.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, there have been so many after, especially even by comedians like Amy Poehler and Mindy Kaling, and I like Mindy's a lot more than Amy's, but like I felt like Amy sort of paled in comparison to
Tina's. I would say the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Every book by a comedian since then reminds me of Bossy Pants. I always think of it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I feel like they read it beforehand.
Yeah, right.
Or at Take least notes. Their editor and the publisher. I'm going to name, I know you don't read Lewis.
not avidly enough, though I think I have maybe a little undiagnosed ADD. I just can't sit there and do it, unfortunately.
I get it. There were a few things this decade that really popped out for me, and I saw them on my bookshelf, so I would be remiss to not mention them. Citizen by Claudia Rankine is a fantastic book. It's about race. It's a beautiful essay about Serena Williams in it. I read it on a plane, and I usually fall asleep on a plane from drinking too much champagne, and I couldn't put it down, and I felt like I was done in an hour.
Wow.
Yeah. Underground Railroad by Colson Whitehead.
Mm-hmm.
That will soon be a limited television series from Barry Jenkins.
That seems like the right way to handle that material.
Yeah.
You would think immediately whenever a book comes out, a movie. But
Yeah. White Girls by Hilton Nels. He is a culture critic for The New Yorker. We've talked about him before. And that's a very good book. And speaking of The New Yorker, Gia Tolentino.
That book fucking
Trick
rules.
Mirror. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a book where you read a sentence and you're like, hold on, let me make sure I understood everything that was just said in that sentence. Okay, great. Moving on. Takes a long time for me to read like that, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. And a former coworker of mine, Hanif Adirakweeb, They Can't Kill Us Until They Kill Us, is a fantastic music culture book, and it has an essay about Fall Out Boy that made me cry.
Yes, and also he's the reason why I listened to Carly Rae Jepsen. I'd never listened to Carly Rae until I read that article, read that essay in that book, and I was like, okay, let me go back, because if Hanif likes it, I probably like it. And
then yeah, oh, you read that book.
Love that book.
That book is so fucking great.
It's wonderful.
Yeah,
and it's
he's such an amazing writer. I mean, like, the evocativeness of his words.
And especially, you know, that angle of being the only black kid at a Fall Out Boy concert. Like, that's such an important thing that I'd never read, being who I am. And it really did change my life.
Yeah.
You guys should have seen the tingle that just ran through I wrote. You look like Luther Vandross going through it or something.
The closer Aida gets to me. Was there anything that you read this year that, like, you feel popped?
There was a book I read that was fabulous. In fact, you bought it for me. Hunger by Roxane Gay.
Mm. Oh, okay. Yes.
I find her writing so unembellished, and that is just not how I write. So when I hear someone do that really well, I'm jealous because I don't have that skill. I want to throw adverbs in everything.
Roxane Gay is from Nebraska.
Oh, really?
She went to UNL, and she came back and talked to our school and signed my little books, My Bad Feminist, My Hunger. I was so happy about it.
Yeah. Someone else I worked with, Saeed Jones's How We Fight for Our Lives.
Okay.
That was a fantastic book, and I would recommend it to anyone who wants to read work by a black queer writer. And finally, I guess, Negroland was a book I've mentioned before on here by Margo Jefferson. It's about sort of like the Jack and Jill culture in the Midwest.
Yeah.
You know, light skins versus dark skins. Yeah. A very interesting book.
Let me throw in, I read a lot of books of poetry that I really enjoy. And I mean, Hanif is a poet in a way, but as an essayist also. Morgan Parker's There Are More Beautiful Things Than Beyonce is a beautiful book of poetry.
Yes, yes.
Wonderful, wonderful. Love Morgan Parker so much. And I'm trying to expand into novels as well. So I might need to write down everything you and I would say.
A lot of gays really loved A Little Life. It inspired a lot of things in me, love and anger, so I guess I'd be remiss to mention it. Not to mention it. And finally, it took me forever all year, but I finally finished A Brief History of Seven Killings by Marlon James, and he's just a fucking amazing writer.
I'm frankly impressed by you, Ira. You also look
Where do you make the time?
Do you ever just think about Ira can read all that shit, and truly he watches three times the television I do. How much shit do I watch, right? Like, I've convinced you guys I know certain things, right? Like, it's really staggering. Yeah. So congrats to you for being you.
And you make things. How do you consume and produce all this at the same time?
Right. Yeah. So anyway.
Well.
The think piece will be coming soon. Yeah. The expose.
Favorite artist of the decade is Ira.
it's called Crystal Meth.
Get with it.
You've heard of chem sex? I do chem reading.
Chem sex. What a crazy term.
Coming up, our conversation with Shani Nicholas.
You like to watch new stuff, right? Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time. Like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. A new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's all new, and it's streaming now on Hulu.
Welcome back to our studio, where we have a special guest with us today, Toucan Sam from Fruit Loops. Toucan Sam, welcome.
It's my pleasure to be here. Oh, and it's Fruit Loops, just so you know.
Fruit?
Fruit.
Yeah, fruit.
No, it's Fruit Loops. The same way you say studio.
That's not how we say it.
Fruit Loops, find the loopy side.
Aida and I are back with Shawnee Nicholas.
Hi,
Shawnee. Hi.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, yes. So happy to have you.
I have not seen you since my birthday.
Oh, my God.
In your lovely grease look.
I tried my very best. Fran definitely outdid me.
Yes, Fran Torrado was definitely a highlight of the look. He had a whole, like, pink lady slash greaser look slash Riverdale. It was chic.
There have got to be photos somewhere.
There are photos. Okay. I'll show you photos.
I need to see.
Yes. I'm excited to have you here.
I'm so excited to be here.
Because first of all, I'm already subscribed to your astrology newsletter.
Oh my God.
Yes, I get it all the time. And also you have a new book coming out. You were born for this. Astrology for Radical Self-Acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to have you here so you could talk to Aida and I, because we love astrology.
Thank you. I wanted to harass Lewis.
Yes, you know. He couldn't make it.
Somehow he had to leave early. I don't know. I'm not taking it personally, but it's fine.
But you know what? I'm going to have you tell us what you think about Lewis, too.
Yeah,
from
read his chart.
From his sign, okay? From his chart. I want to know. I want to know the tea.
We'll throw all the shade.
Yes,
like, were we ever compatible as hosts?
Yes.
Were we ever?
But we'll get into that in a bit. Before we even get to that, before you talk about my chart, Aida's charts, let's just talk about it in general.
Let's do it.
How is astrology such an important part of culture right now?
How? Mm-hmm. How? I mean, I think one of the original conversations we had was because Lewis was like, oh my God, I can't with the astrology on Twitter. And I was like, totally, me too. Let's have a conversation about it. Astrology is just one of those things that's incredibly memeable.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about archetypes. And so you're talking about personalities and everyone wants to hear about themselves and talk about themselves all the time. Mm-hmm. And so become these like little 12 repositories for every horrible characteristic of your ex or your dad or you, whoever. And you can like everyone's now just blaming everything on a sign.
Yeah.
And astrology is much deeper than that, obviously. And it's actually, you know, signs are places in the sky, but it's really about the planets and what the planets are doing. So, you know, astrology is having this moment because of social media. I think, like, a lot of things are having a moment because of social media. There's also, like, the media also loves it. So,
yeah,
it's like this feedback loop. It's good for us. It's good for astrologers, but it's also a little ridiculous.
Yeah, I find it really interesting because when I'm on social media, I will see all the memes and the Instagram accounts that are like, if you're a Taurus, you're a bitch. If you're this, you're that. I'm like, this goes so much. It goes beyond like these obligatory things about a person and more so like, of course, you're going to tell us about it. What's going on for you right now and the current state of things like that. Yeah, so it's very interesting to read up about. But I will say I'm coming from a place of I'm just now learning about astrology.
Okay,
so I'm bare minimum knowledge, but I'm on board.
Yeah, yeah. And it's also so much more than about personality. It's really about like the shape of somebody's life.
Mm-hmm.
And so the book that I wrote was really about like there's an imprint of your life purpose in your chart. And it's not just about your psychological, like the psychological meanings of the signs. It's really about how the sky was shaped the moment you were born and what it says about what you're here to do.
Yeah. Yeah. That's beautiful.
More than just annoy your coworkers.
Yeah.
Not you.
Oh, you'd
Lewis.
Be surprised.
He's not here, so we can't, you know.
Yes. So who have been your influences in your work and your writing? You know, like how can people follow a path of astrology further back? You know, like how can we research it? How can we study it?
Mm. Well, we're really lucky now because we have, in the Western tradition, we've had like a resurgence and a reconnection to our like ancient past, which was disconnected for a really long time. So there was astrology for like 1,000 years or so, like in the iteration that it's in now. And then it went underground because of things like Christianity and like heretics and witch hunts and all that kind of stuff.
Didn't want to get burnt.
You know, and so like things go underground and then they pop up. And so we've had like this resurfacing of all this ancient material and you can get it online. I mean, you can like download a book. So it's cumbersome and it's boring and it's stale and it's like in ancient types. It's like translated from ancient Greek or Latin or what have you. So it's like not super fun to read. But if you want to read the ancient stuff, you can just do it now. Whereas mm-hmm. when I was, you know, studying, that was impossible.
Mm-hmm. What I would say is very interesting is I know there are probably a lot of Keep It listeners, too, right now, who are like, y'all talking about astrology? What's the tea? but I would say that a lot of people steeped within culture and the writing that we love and, you know, make the things that we consume,
yeah.
Take part in this. I'm friends with Terrell Alvin McCraney, mm-hmm. Writer behind Moonlight, the amazing TV series David Makes Man, brilliant playwright. He looks at the charts of all of the characters that he creates for his shows, for his work.
Oh, my God.
And that's what helps guide him through telling stories.
How does he find the chart? This that the moment the character came to him?
Yeah, you know, he talks about the moment the character came to him, talks about how he feels if this character is a Leo, if this character is a Taurus, if this, you know.
Oh my goodness, I need to talk to him.
That's beautiful, yeah. Definitely
wow.
An extra layer of thought.
Yeah, and there's a chart for everything. Like there's mm-hmm. a chart for our moment of meeting, there's a chart for the podcast. You know, there's any time anything has a conception, there's a chart to it. So I love that. That's really fascinating.
Yeah, that is really fascinating. Yeah. What I've noticed, I think, with astrology in general is that I have only, like most white people that I know aren't very interested in it in a deep way, like a deep visceral way. I find that like it's always queer people or mm-hmm. it's always people of color or people mm-hmm. who are coming from some trauma. And as someone who didn't understand what astrology really was at first, I was like, I get it. We're just trying to find meaning and we're just making stuff up. But as I got deeper into reading about astrology, I was like, I have to start giving more credence to this because it's not just a way, it is a way to heal, but also a way to understand my trauma a lot better than mm-hmm. I was before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like any healing practice. It can give us context. And if we have some context, we can locate ourselves in a different way and then have a relationship because context also can give perspective.
Yeah.
I think we need that in order to heal.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think that's the main reason why it's so resonant in queer communities. You know,
yes.
I mean, my way back into astrology has been through queer writers and artists that I know, we enjoy talking about it, you know, whether it's on Twitter, whether it's on Instagram, sharing memes with one another.
Yeah.
So I think if so many of us are just finding a meaning in this, you know, it must have some weight and importance.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you know, astrology is related to religion. It's not a religion, but astrology is the study of the sky and the movement of the planets, but also the movement of the sun and the moon. And if you look in most major religions, like most religious festivals happen around the solstice or the equinox because we're deeply rooted in earth cycles mm-hmm. and in our relationship with nature. And, you know, Jews celebrate the new moon. A lot of Buddhist and Hindu holidays fall around the new and full moon. And if you look and see, like, we're like if we go back into the roots before even these world religions, we were focused on the sun and moon and their cycles because we needed to be. We were reliant on the earth and the sun and all that stuff. And so it's baked into astrology. So the root systems of our major religions, science, medicine, all of these things are also intertwined with astrology. So it's like it's in the fabric of our culture in a lot of ways. And I think we yearn for that meaning. And I think we yearn for that context, both personally and also societally. And then I think like a lot of us grew up in systems where like religious systems or spiritual ideologies that don't have room for folks if they're queer. And so mm-hmm. I think astrology kind of is a bit of a bridge between that.
Yeah.
Oh, talking then about charts, what is the idea of a chart anyway?
Mm. Great mm-hmm. question. Mm-hmm. It's the snapshot of the sky the moment you took your first breath at the very location within which you were born. So from that hospital bed or from that bed, we look at the sky and we say like, oh, that is the exact degree that's rising up over the eastern horizon the moment you take your first breath and you're like, I'm living here on my own. And that is your rising sign.
Okay.
And so that is the most personal part of your chart because it changes so quickly. You know, the sky moves around pretty, and the sun is in the same sign for like 30 days. So the sign of your sun is not even as like particular as your rising sign. And the moon also moves really quickly. So that one's also like the moon tells you a lot about your own personal makeup.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the snapshot of the sky, and then you're looking to see like how the planets are talking to each other, what they're saying, and the planets will be dictating like, oh, this person should probably go into this avenue of life and express themselves in this kind of way.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So far from keeping track, there's a rising, there's a moon, and there's a sun. Are there other aspects to the chart?
Yeah, then there's all the other planets and how it's really important to see, like, what's coming up over the eastern horizon, because that is literally the rising sign. It's the rising of life. It's where the sun rises and all the stars rise. So there's this, like, feeling of lifting up and of life. And so anything in the first house or in the same sign as your rising sign is really important because it marks who you are and your motivation for living and, like, how you express yourself. And then it's like how all the other planets are talking to each other. But you really want to see, like, what's happening with your sun, your moon, your rising sign in your first house, and then the planet that rules that sign.
Okay.
So each planet rules a sign, and there's all these different houses. There's 12 different houses. There's 12 different signs. There's 7 classical planets, and then there's a couple, 3 more modern ones and some asteroids and all the other things.
Gotcha. Well, I belong to the house of Wintour. Lewis is the house of Atreus. There's a lot of bloodshed and Electra and Oedipal shit going on. Why don't we start talking about charts then?
Yeah, let's start.
Okay. Aida?
I'm very eager. I'm very excited.
So do you know much about your chart?
I know that I am a Cancer. Mm-hmm. I was born in July. Mm-hmm. And that's all I have for you.
So when I look at the chart first, I look at the rising sign. Okay. And so your rising, do we have your exact time of birth? Do you know, is there a way that it could be like an hour different?
Definitely not an hour different.
Okay, cool.
It's been a couple minutes.
Okay, cool. So we've got Taurus rising.
Yes.
You know that.
Yeah.
Do you resonate with that?
I had to be reminded of what I was. But I do resonate with that because people have told me Taurus is an earth sign.
Uh-huh.
And even though I guess my Cancer makes me sensitive, the Taurus kind of like balances me out, I guess.
Yeah,
like,
so
grounded, I don't know.
The rising sign is like is your motivation for living, and it's also the impression you make upon the world.
Oh.
And Taurus is here to be like, look, I'm steady, I'm sturdy, I'm reliable, I'm going to get this thing done, I'm not going to veer off course, I'm just going to be stubborn, but also quite pleasant in my way of going about something, but I'm not going to be veered off.
Okay.
Whereas your Cancer sun is much more like intuitive, it's sensitive, it's softer, it's going to be more held in, so you're going to be more, like Cancer's more prone to wanting to know where safety is. But And Taurus loves that because Taurus is like, I would like all the nice things.
Definitely.
It's very sensual, and it's uh-huh. ruled by Venus. So when I look at your rising sign, that's the only thing I see. So I'm like, okay, well, it's like a practicality about it. It's like, well, how do we get things done? And let's move through the world in a certain way that's like not super fussy. Let's just get the thing done, and also be a place of generativity. And probably you're somebody who people are like, oh, I like you.
I would say that.
Easy to be with.
Yeah. I would say that. Maybe.
It's an easygoing vibe up front. But your Venus is actually so the planet that rules that is the planet that steers the direction of your life.
Okay.
And that planet is Venus. So Venus is the goddess of love and beauty and connection.
That's cool.
And so it's a lot about, so that your life is steered by the planet of relationships. And it's in the fourth house of home and family. So there's something really important about your connection to your roots, ancestry, home, family, foundation. And there's probably like layers of stories there that you may or may not want to get into on air. But whatever happens there is so, like, I want you to have like a really good home base and feel like it's like a solid place to come from and that you can be somebody who's like unfolding in that place. Does that make sense? Like,
no, definitely.
Got to be a root grounded. I want you to have that sense of security and feel like you can flourish there. And like, that's where you're a queen.
Good. Yeah, that makes sense. Whenever my home environment is unstable, I'm entirely
it's awful
unstable.
For you. Yeah. Yeah. It's like, it's key to your life. And then is there anything about your life where you do like research into like the histories of things? Or?
Yeah. My family is Ethiopian and Eritrean.
Yeah.
And as I've been going back ancestrally and all the culture about it, it's such a rich and deep history that actually has like the origins of human race stuff. So it's terrifying. It's terrifying, the things that I've been learning about my family and my bloodlines and things like that. And like, we have so much information that has just been kept within our own generation and community. So I have a lot of knowledge from like the past like 300, 400 years about great, 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 great grandmas. And
wow.
Yeah, they've done a really good job of just keeping the memorizing stories and passing them on.
Wow. So if you ever did something with that, that it's like it could be a part of your life's purpose to actually do something about those histories or those lineages.
Yeah.
Like bring them forward in some way.
Noted. Okay, noted.
Or if you like wrote a movie script that was like informed by all of that or like was about the roots or traditions of some family, like origin stories are like really, I would think, important for you. Because it's in Leo, so there's something like dramatic that also wants to be done about it.
Yeah, definitely. It's a whole orchestration, definitely. So that is because Venus is what dictates.
Venus is like, I'm driving the ship of her life.
Okay.
And I want to go home. Like, mm-hmm. I want to go to the roots. I want to go to the base. So, and it's in Leo, so it's really like dramatic and like beautiful.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's got all the flavor and all the style. But it is about that place in your life. And also you building your own home will be a whole thing for you. It would be really important. Or it is probably
it is.
Now.
It is, especially now, yeah.
Yeah, it's like that has to be there. And then all the other stuff can flow. And then your son and your son are both in the third house of communication.
Oh, okay. Mine as well. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, which kind of makes some sense.
Yes, we chatting.
Yeah. So that means So that means your life purpose is to convey the message, to give it out, to write it, to speak it, to deliver it, to study, to do things that are about information, and also like sisters and brothers and siblings and cousins and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Again, there's like a family vibe there, but it's really about you shining in the place of communication.
Okay. Mm.
Okay, Sir Ira. So you've had a reading before, right?
Yes, yes.
Okay. I mean, obviously you're Gemini rising.
Yes. Your face! Shawnee's face!
Shawnee's cackling right now. She's cackling.
Okay, so rising sign. What we want to be known for. The impression we want to make upon the world.
Mm-hmm.
So if I was sitting with your parents when you were born, I would have been like, this little one is going to have some things to say. So you want to be known for your ability to communicate
mm-hmm.
and relay information and look at a lot of different sides and go around a topic and utilize your intellect mm-hmm. to be known in the world. Like, these are my ideas and this is how I'm going to get them across. You do have now I'm not sure how potent this is because we don't know exact time of birth, but mm-hmm. Chiron was rising, like on your ascendant when you were born. And so there is a need to tell stories about human suffering, or at least go into the genre of that. Like, Chiron is the wounded healer. And so mm-hmm. there's a feeling of needing to be able to explore that wounded condition in humanity and how we might heal, don't heal, the ever bleeding wound that always informs us. But does that resonate with you?
Yeah. I mean, that's usually what a lot of my writing's about.
Yeah. 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 And then the planet that rules Gemini is obviously Mercury, the communicator.
Okay.
Also, the one, you know, Mercury is the most queer planet I think we have.
Okay.
Mercury can be a
the
day.
The word queer has been used.
You know what I'm saying? Mercury can be a day or night planet. Mm. Mercury can be in the ancient, I don't gender planets, but they did. And so Mercury can be both male and female.
Mm-hmm.
Mercury is everything. Mercury is mercurial. So it's changeable, right? So you have the planet that's a trickster.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one that changes. Mercury can get into the upper realms and into the lower realms. Mercury mm-hmm. can get anywhere because of its quick
Mercury's
wit.
Doing what she has to do.
Yeah.
That's what we're saying. Mercury's Fewer knives words. Are out.
Spin a tail. Do a couple tricks and Mercury can get where Mercury needs to go.
Okay.
And your Mercury is, so we've got the planet of communication steering your life direction, and it's sitting in the house of how you make money
mm-hmm.
and also your greatest resource.
Mm-hmm.
And so your greatest resource is your mind and your ability to use it and communicate. It's in the sign of Cancer. So that's where the two of you meet.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Right? So your sun and your Mercury. So there's a good communication happening there.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, Cancer's known for being a little moody,
mm-hmm.
a little sensitive. And wanting that ability to get to the feeling and the heart of the matter.
Mm-hmm.
So would you say that your life is steered by the need to communicate and to connect with people, or at least like hit them where it's going to connect with them emotionally. Yeah.
You know, it's a lot of grasping at emotion. I mean, yeah. I remember in grad school, at some point, someone was like, is every play you write going to be about your father? I was like, all right, well, maybe so.
Listen. I love it. And that's how you make money. Mm-hmm. And so part of when I see that, I'm like, oh, well, also how you facilitate making a living is a really big and important piece of your life for you. Mm-hmm. So making your first paycheck and like making sure that you feel secure with the amount of money that you have is also really important, mm-hmm. but that you do that with your intellect and your ability to spin a tail. Mm-hmm. And then we have a glorious sun in Leo.
We do.
So the strong thing about sun in Leo is that it's in its own sign. So each planet belongs to a sign, and when a planet's in a sign, it like pops because it doesn't have to pretend that it's anything else. It's not wearing clothes that it doesn't like. It's in its glory. And so it rules your, it's like owning your third house of communication. And so this is how you shine. It's where you shine. It's a must. So it's also like the neighborhoods that you grew up in and the schools you went to and like all of the different social dynamics that you were a part of and having to, and I'm not saying this was always easy for you because I don't think it was, but always like trying to facilitate how to create that space for yourself and mm-hmm. how to find the stage to shine upon for yourself. And then you've got Moon in Taurus,
mm-hmm.
all the pretty things.
Yes.
So we have a connection again. You have Taurus rising, yeah. Taurus moon. Mm-hmm. And so Taurus, the moon is like how we live our daily life. Mm-hmm. So a Taurus moon needs things to feel good, smell good, look good, be beautiful and luxurious and enjoyable. And it's also really strong. Your moon is exalted there. So you've got two really strong luminaries, which means you're a force to be reckoned with. But and also the moon in this house system is sitting in the 12th house of behind the scenes work. So it's like there's both a need for you to shine and to put your thoughts out into the world and to be applauded for that. And then there's also a real need for you to be in creative dark rooms and studios and places that are behind the scenes. And that in the behind the scenes place, it's actually where you have almost the most strength. Like there's such an obvious strength in terms of your ability to express yourself. But in the behind the scenes incubators and studios and all the things in secret that like nobody else sees, there's a real calling for you to be in those places. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Like you need both, but you have a lot of natural talent mm-hmm. to kind of lead or be able to build something in a behind the scenes way. So probably, you know, I would think you've got a million things going on all the time that nobody knows about, or not everybody knows about. Mm-hmm. And there's this like this kind of force that's happening behind you. And there's the things you put out, but then there's all the stuff that goes on. Mm-hmm. Is that true?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So that's like a snapshot of both of you.
Wow.
Just picking up on the major pieces.
Okay.
That was very
good?
No, that was really good. Yeah. I resonated with like.
Because then there's all the other things, but also then there's all the other stuff that's happening to you at this moment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. So.
So how would you recommend if I want to keep up with my, you know, astrological sign
transits
and learn about
and stuff.
It? And, yeah. Is this a daily thing? Is this a.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It's like when you need it, like find an astrologer that you really like and get a reading from them once a year.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have somebody you go to once a year?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like.
Not yet.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, I'm up at the House of Intuition.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's really great to like build. I go to for a reading once a year with my teacher, Demetra George.
Okay.
And I know what's happening, but I'd like to hear it from. And then she always sees stuff that I don't see or I forget.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really great to have that. And something, you know, there's a magical law of three, right? So when you and me sit together, there's a third space that's created. And that space is the healing space. It's kind of like the therapeutic space.
Mm-hmm.
So it's good to learn on your own. And then it's also really good to be with an actual astrologer and build a relationship with them.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
And read the book.
Yeah, thank you.
We will. Thank you for being on this journey.
You were born for this.
Tell us one thing about Lewis. One thing about Lewis Vertel.
Okay, Lewis. Well, what I noticed right off the bat about Lewis is there was this like, I mean, like I was like looking for all of the like, how does he know so many random facts about yeah. everybody all the time. And I can definitely see that. But what really jumped out in his chart was this, like, it's this really kind of funny signature of, is he, like, just, is he really lucky? Like, does he have a lot of, is there, like, an incredible amount of ease for him? Or is there, like, a distraction of a good time? Or, like, is there a lot of...
I would say that Lewis walks into a room and heads sort of turn.
You know?
And even us as friends are sort of sometimes baffled by, you know, like, is he wearing love potion number 9?
You know what I'm saying? Like, I was like, oh, okay, Lewis, I yeah. see the tricks you have up your sleeve. Mm-hmm. He's just got this incredibly beneficial, it's like a little streak. I mean, he's got other things, he's got challenges. He really should be in publishing. He really should be, like, putting information out there. He really should be, like, you, all three of you have this big, yeah. like, information streak.
He Lewis just wrote a book.
Yeah, it's yeah, weird definitely. That he doesn't like to travel. He just mm-hmm. wrote a book, you said?
He needs to write a book.
He needs to write a book. Yeah. But will he?
No. He was telling me, I heard we should write a book. I'm like,
who's like we?
I said, Lewis, you write a book. I'm working on something.
You're working on 12 things.
Yeah. Yes. You know, Lewis is from the Midwest like me, you know? And I would say that... for him, I have that wanderlust that, like, yeah. I've got to be everywhere, yeah. anywhere, in some nice space, yeah. you know, whether it's Europe, whether it's, you know, Mexico, South America, somewhere. Yeah. And Lewis likes to find his
little niche.
His little mm-hmm. niche, yeah. you know? Yeah. You know, traveling with him is very much like, where can he find his comfort food instead of, I don't want that tasting menu.
To try a new thing, wow.
But do people just, like, bring him his comfort food? Like,
I mean, he goes and get it. But I'm not making a reservation for Lewis.
You're the one who won't.
Yeah, I'm not making a reservation for him at this restaurant.
You know, we don't have a good time of birth for him, so his whole chart could be in a different position. But the one thing I'm looking at is like, oh, that looks like a lot of fun, or like there's a streak of like good luck or ease or something mm-hmm. in there that I would
wow.
say.
Yeah, we yeah. love it. Yeah. I love him.
Yeah.
Same.
Lovely. Yeah. But also Leo, he's Leo Sun and Moon.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Even I mean, more than you.
I know. The drama.
What's his rising?
Well, we don't know. Because oh, okay. it's at the very end of Sagittarius. So if he was born 5 minutes later, it would be a different sign.
It could be. It's on.
Yeah,
okay.
yeah, 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 yeah. Which I think it might be. I don't think this is. Because this is a very, like, traveling, like, mm-hmm. out there chart. I'm not
yeah.
sure.
Yeah, that's not her.
It's not, yeah.
No. All right. Well, thank you for that brief snapshot.
Thank you so much.
Lovely to sit with you.
And you were born for this, Astrology for Radical Self-Acceptance. You uncopped that in January.
January 7th. Yes. Yeah, it's out.
Right.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, we're back. Some keepers to take us into 2020 from me, Lewis, and Aida.
You like to watch new stuff, right? Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time. Like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. A new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's all new, and it's streaming now on Hulu.
Silence is golden, especially when it comes to brakes. That's why Napa Silent Guard are built to be one of the smoothest and most quiet brakes on the market. Made with fiber-reinforced shims that eliminate noise for the life of the pad, rubber-coated hardware for a better fit, and quality design that meets and exceeds OE performance. Silent Guard brakes deliver the stopping power drivers demand. Available now at Napa locations nationwide. Napa!
And we're back with our favorite segment of the episode. Lewis, what's your keep it today?
Controversial keep it. Hope you're ready.
Lay it on us.
New Year's is upon us. Keep it to champagne. I don't love it. I don't love when it's randomly offered to me at a New Year's Eve party and I have to gulp it on the spot with people. Because first of all, you don't know what kind of champagne it is. It could be kind of tasty, or it could be what most champagne is, which is petrified urine.
What the fuck is wrong
with you?
Yeah,
what is
going on? It is not good, and you want a hangover? You better gulp that.
I think that you just don't taste good champagne.
Oh, that cannot. Who wants to drink a lot of it?
I do. I love champagne.
I love champagne.
I truly would prefer Skol vodka. I'm not kidding.
Okay.
What?
Okay, well, that's a choice. That is a weird choice.
A delicious choice with a little cranberry.
Okay, maybe every champagne that you've had has been burnt.
I'm not saying I'm on the wrong half of a dynasty conversation. I'm saying that could be me, but I don't like, because it's, first of all, rude to turn it down, especially in the space of a party, in the space of we're
it's
all clinking glasses.
It's not rude to turn it down. Do what the fuck you want.
Also, you don't
have to gulp it down. You toast to it, and then you take a sip.
A light sip. And hold it. Let it get warm in your hand.
I just don't know social norms, and you're confused when someone offers you something and think that you have to chug it down so you can win Legends of the Hidden Temple.
Liquor with bubbles in it. It's a no for me.
All right.
I don't like liquor that gurgles.
I mean, you drink something with tonic.
I don't drink tonic, nor do I drink soda. Any other arguments while you lose?
Do you just drink your vodka straight, Zangief?
Good Russia reference. No, I prefer, I like a whiskey. I love, by the way, always buy me Johnny Walker stuff. Please. That speaks to me. I just don't get it. I just have never gotten it.
Okay.
I don't even like wine that much.
See, this is where you fucked up.
See, you think
that's
so?
That's where you fucked up. Yeah.
Aida, what's your keep it?
My keep it.
Okay. I am disgusted.
Good. Keep it in mind.
My keep it right now, so I just went to go on my phone and I tried to tweet something probably offensive and heinous,
mm-hmm.
but it said that my account features had been limited for the next 11 hours and 59 minutes. So that means I just got in trouble for something. I must have said it recently.
Girl, what did you do?
Don't even know what I did. I don't know what I did. I tried to tweet, didn't work. And so my keep it is to Jack over at Twitter. Look me in my eyes, Jack. I am mad.
He's not watching this.
I know. He's not on this. He's not on a Snapchat. He's not on an Instagram. You
no.
don't think? You think he's only on Twitter?
Yes.
I'm mad.
He doesn't
because,
give a fuck about keep it.
No. Well, keep it to Jack still because I started a conversation on Twitter recently about the first time a black person got called the N-word. So I really believe that a lot I'm maybe being reported by white people or conservatives because I've started this dialogue, and then a lot of people have been sending me their stories about the first time they got called the N-word, but their tweet was blocked. Or they got suspended for that tweet because they said the N-word. But mm-hmm. these are black people.
Mm-hmm.
So it's this conversation of, like, why can't we talk about our oppression? Why can't we talk about stories that have happened to us? Because it is inherently offensive just to view it in a public mm-hmm. place. So that's my keep it. It's kind of serious. But it's also like, fuck you, Jack. Just yeah. fuck you.
If that's fucking what happened, that annoys
I think
the
that's what
shit
happened.
Out of me.
Yeah, the first time I got called N-word was 1953. It was Joe Biden by accident, but he still said it.
He meant it in a nice way. You're yeah. not being kind.
I was reading Nigger Heaven by Carl Van Heck.
Right, minding your own business.
He was just saying the title of the book.
Right. Mm-hmm.
My keep it this week is to all of you cowards
mm-hmm.
who use iMessage. Because in 2020, my red receipts are on and my knives, they're out.
Even though you already saw the movie in 2019. It's going to seem passé in a little while is all I'm saying.
Well, to be fair, in 2020, I've decided that my guns will be topped.
Uh-huh.
Because I am the foremost Tom Cruise stan.
Still?
He's problematic, but I love him.
You're Jack reaching here.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say.
Stop.
My short white king can make me a cocktail anytime he wants.
I mean, technically, the show is a Minority Report.
There you are.
I tried.
Yeah.
I wanted
no,
to be
you
a part of the game.
Yeah. That was it. Yes.
Yeah. Maybe second most after Amy Nicholson. She did write a book on him.
Oh, right. That's correct. That's
yes,
correct.
Yes.
Wait, this was back to, red receipts. Yeah, I do unfortunately think they are, to use an old term, a baller move.
Yeah.
Ira, have yours been off in the past?
They have been off in the past. Sometimes I will turn them on when I want to send a man a message.
Uh-huh.
But this time I want to send everyone a message. I've read it, and I'll get to you when I get to you.
Right. Or will I?
Yeah. I just think that it will normalize the fact that you can take time to respond to a text message. It mm-hmm. doesn't need to be immediate. I feel that on Instagram DM, like when you get one, because it tells you seen,
right?
And you feel the compulsory, like, oh, I have to tap their reply, or oh, yeah, I have to respond right away because they've seen that I've seen it. And if I don't respond, they'll be like, oh, do they not care about me? No, I saw it while I was doing something else.
Right.
And
you should just assume immediately I said shut up.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Out loud to the phone.
Yeah.
A new wave. I'll do it too.
Mm-hmm. All right. We're in this together.
Yes. And listen, when I get your message, it does not mean that my eyes are wide shut. Okay? They were open. I saw your message, and I'll get back to it soon.
You saw Aiyana and I having a good time with the movie puns, and you wanted to join in, and now you look silly.
I look dumb, like I was just born on the 4th of July. Oh, shucks.
Cocktail.
That was our episode. Thank you so much for listening to Keep It all of 2019. We'll see you in 2020. Thanks again to Shawnee. Thank you, Aida. Thank you, Lewis. And thank you, listeners. We'll see you next time. Keep It is a product of Crooked Media. Caroline Rustin is our producer. It's Caroline, like the princess, the one you don't care about. Our editor is Bill Lance, and Kyle Seguin is our sound engineer. Thanks to our digital team, Elijah Cohn and Nadine Melkonian, for filming and editing our video content every week.